And you are listening to the Fans of Wrestling Show here on the FOW Radio Network. I am Patrick with Danny Danger. Mika Villas back together again. Another week. More wrestling to talk about. How are we doing this evening?
We're doing good. You know, it was a big, big weekend for wrestling. And, of course, we always have another coming. We're doing well, man. We got a lot of stuff to talk about.
Lots of stuff. Feeling good. Feeling loose. Let's go, boys.
Indeed. Well, this past weekend, we got to see WWE's first ever all-women's pay-per-view, Evolution. And it's definitely a show that did not disappoint. So let's go ahead and go chronologically from beginning to end. And we're not going to discuss the dark match because that, I'm sure, is going to be shown on WWE Network on NXT UK TV. So in your opening match, Trish Stratus and Lita defeated Mickey James and Alicia Fox with Alexa Bliss in their corner. Of course, Bliss still dealing with an injury, so Fox got to do the sub in. What do you guys think? I mean, it was a pretty good opener. You get Trish and Lita, who are, of course, over like Rover here with the crowd, and get the crowd popping and get right into it. They did, you know, their signature moves. And, of course, James and Fox are pros. They know how to, you know, help them out with their rust. Of course, they have not been in the ring for a while. So, yeah, I thought it was a pretty good opener and a great way to start the show, get the fans excited and people happy with, you know, two of their biggest stars making their in-ring return.
I mean, I was surprised that match went on first, especially because some of the first things announced for Evolution as far as matches went were, you know, Trish Stratus, you know, returning and Lita returning. Like, those were some of the first things they announced. So to put that match on first, to me, I thought was a little odd, but I understood it also, knowing that, you know, there may be ring rust there. They may not be as crisp and clean, and there wasn't as big of a story thing. But, you know, you don't want to open with a championship. You had several championships, you know, defended throughout the night. The Raw Women's, the SmackDown Women's, the NXT Women's, and then you had the Mae Young Classic finalists. So you didn't want to necessarily put those on first either. But it just seemed, when I saw that that match was starting the show, I went, okay, all right, we're getting it going. But like you said, the crowd was into it. You know, even though it was a little bit slippy and sloppy here and there, you know, everybody still looked decent and the crowd enjoyed it. I think the crowd was probably a little more forgiving as well than they might have been in other matches, but it wasn't bad. I was, you know, I definitely knew that the vets were going over, but I thought that Alicia Fox would be the one taking the pin, especially because she was the late addition to the match. But I guess Mickey can absorb the pin and have it not really affect her in the long run.
Yeah,
but still got a healthy dose of Bliss out there too, so that was good.
I was very surprised that match was first. Like you said, I thought the two Hall of Famers would, especially considering they're not older women, that they still have a couple of years still in them if they were so inclined to get back into the ring. So I was like, whoa, this is first. Okay. With Bliss being injured, it was not the match that everybody was anticipating, understood. I love the fact that Lita, in my estimation, gave a little shout out to her old ring gear.
No, that wasn't good.
No,
it
no.
Looked like, it looked like she was wearing like a weight belt underneath her pants.
I really wasn't sure exactly what that was. I had to take a couple of looks to realize what she was going with that. Yeah.
Supposed to be an homage to the thong showing. But like it, then I started seeing all these memes and jokes about like, you could tell she was raised on Lucha because she was wearing her underwear way up past her belly button, like they showed pics of old luchadors would do, you know? Yeah, it looked really odd. That was the thing that I was in a room full of with a half dozen other people watching it, and that was some of the stuff everybody was like, "What is that? Is that supposed to be like this thong?" But it looked like a like it was really wide and heavy, looked leather, like it looked like a almost more like a chastity belt than a thong. I don't know. It was an odd choice, I felt.
I loved it. Again, this is the PG family friendly era where she can't walk around and show her ass literally and truly, but part of the whole Lita mystique, part of the whole everything that helped make Lita Lita was the fact that you saw her thong. So they incorporated it into her outfit. I was upset with Trish's outfit because I felt that she should have gone some old school Stratus, maybe threw some pink in there. At least the duster she should have had on, you know, I felt.
Yeah, the cowboy hat maybe or something.
Something, and she just was like plain old bodysuit Trish, and I was like, aww. Her and Lita matched. It was a black and gold theme, so that was cool. And I know I'm talking about outfits, but it's important because the women not only came to fight, but they came to dress their butts off, too. I love the heel team, Mickey, Alexa, and Foxy, kind of doing a dark Alice in Wonderland thing. I was like, okay, this is cool. I felt that Lita especially did a good job, considering that we've seen her before, and she's been tentative in the ring ever since her neck injury, which is understandable, with Mickey James, who she's got tons of history with Alicia Fox, again, somebody who she's worked with in the past, knowing that they were down in the PC, she and Trish working through this match and getting in, you know, some ring time to help alleviate some of the ring rust. I think Lita looked especially good considering the last time I saw her in a WWE ring, which was very, very shaky. Mickey is MVP. Mickey James should be active Hall of Fame as we speak because she helped to make both Trish and Lita look like they did not miss a step. The match, like you guys already said, wasn't the smoothest and most flowy of matches, which can be in part attributed to both Lita and Trish not being in a ring full time. But Mickey James has been in a ring full time, has had a baby come back to wrestling, and was able to be the perfect base for both Trish and Lita. I was just like, I couldn't watch Trish and Mickey. I had to watch back their match because I was just watching Mickey because she was just so in everywhere she needed to be, every move she needed to do, everything she needed to do to help them and to keep the match solid. That was great. So kudos to Mickey James, Hall of Fame, right the hell now. Let's make it happen. Active Hall of Fame, Mickey James. Alicia, I won't disrespect Alicia again. She has been there for ever and ever. Amen. And again, she is unsung as well. She helped keep everything flowing. And again, I think being there, she helped more so than Alexa Bliss would have in helping Trish and Lita both feel comfortable in what they had to accomplish in that match. So not the best match ever, but absolutely positive, not the worst. Crowd was into it. The fashion was there. The energy was there. And that feeling of nostalgia gave you the warm fuzzies that you needed to go in to have to continue the rest of the pay-per-view.
Next up, Nia Jax wins the 20 Women Battle Royal for a future Women's Championship match. And, of course, she last eliminated Ember Moon. Nia Jax here, your winner. I think she even cried about it after the fact.
That's what she does. Yeah, she's one of those ugly criers. Yeah, so she wins and she cried. And she was there with The Rock's mom. They never referred to her as Nia's aunt. They never referred, like, on whenever it said her name, it always said The Rock's mom. It never said Nia Jax's aunt, which I goes to show who the bigger star is, right? I mean, and yet again, so I actually liked the Battle Royal. I thought everybody had a really good chance to shine, even the ones who, you know, sometimes these Battle Royals can be, I mean, they can be Battle Royals. You know, Battle Royals aren't known to be exceptionally pretty or crisp or exciting, but I felt that everybody got a decent chance to kind of do what they do. You know, once Roman went down, Vince was kind of thinking, okay, who else is related to The Rock that I can push to the top of the division? So you do Nia Jax. For the first time ever in a battle royal, like half the field did not team up against the largest person in the match and eliminate them. Like they usually do in the Royal Rumble, you know, Mark Henry's in there, 9 people go and throw Mark Henry over. Nobody even attempted to do that against Nia Jax. But, you know, I guess this sets her up, her versus Ronda again, is where, it, you know, I mean, well, you know, they had the big stare downs and all this between her and Tamina Snuka. So maybe there's kind of something there for a little bit as a placeholder because Nia won't get her shot against, against Ronda, I'm assuming, until after Survivor Series, the champion versus champion. So you give Nia Jax, you know, this whatever with Tamina, and you take two people that, you know, put Tamina basically in the biggest storyline she's ever been in her career. She's one of, yet again, one of the ones who's been there for so long, but just has never really done anything. She gets hurt. She hurts somebody. Like, she just kind of hangs there in the background. She's supposed to be a vet, but she's not that good. Like, it's just, like, she still has a job. So, you know, I guess she's got some redeeming quality somewhere that WWE finds. And so I guess that's where they're going. But I did enjoy the Battle Royal, you know, even seeing Ivory, you know, she looked pretty good, and Alundra Blaze looked all right. You know, you got to have, you know, wonderful ring generals such as Michelle McCool and Kelly return, you know, to show off the diva days and let those kind of get squashed and put behind us forever, hopefully. You know, but Ember Moon, of course, has a great showing, is an amazing talent. And if, you know, if her and Ruby Riott are pretty much not at the top of the division within the next few years, then I don't know what's going on. To arguably two of the best athletes they have, just as far as just the things they can do and how fluid their motions are.
You will not disrespect my Michelle McCool. And thankfully you didn't say her name, because I like you, but I would have to try to arm wrestle you. Tori Wilson. I love the Battle Royal. I did not like the winner of the Battle Royal winning the Battle Royal. I do believe it should have been Nia Jax. I was pleasantly surprised and shocked that Ivy was one of the last handful of women in the ring. I think that is a testament. Yes, she's a Hall of Famer, but Ivory was so responsible for a lot of the girls back in the diva era getting to where they are today. Like, for instance, your Fox was in on the beginning part of, you know, of her career. I believe she worked with Ivory. So I think it was just kind of a very subtle shout out to the fact that you had this person in there who had been through several different eras. Ivory was there before there were even the divas, when there were just literally about four women who would be regulars on WWE programming and would have a match or two. And she spanned a lot of talented women coming and going in and out of the WWE. And for her to be in that Battle Royal and be one of the last ones there was great. I feel that Holly should have had a more prominent showing, but okay, I understand there's so many women in the ring. You can't give everybody their just dessert, so to speak. I love Tori Wilson again. I love Tori was in there doing her thing. Kelly, yeah, you know, that is, you want to talk about throwback to divas? I love the fact that Beth Phoenix had to call this on commentary and be like, oh, Kelly and I mean, come on, Beth. Like, for real, yeah, y'all had matches before, but you wrestled yourself pretty much during that time frame, let's be honest. But okay, whatever. Girl power, I get it. Ember Moon should have won that. I love the fact that the crowd was on fire for her. I know that it was Nia's night, but damn it, Vincent Kennedy McMahon, you're in Gorilla. Call it audible and say, you know what? Sorry, Rock's mom. But we're going to give it to the redhead girl over here, okay? Check your bloodline. She could be related to y'all, too. I don't know. I don't care. Let's go with her. Yeah, Ember Moon should have won. I don't care for Nia Jax getting another title shot. I didn't care that she cried. Rock's mom. Yeah, as you called her, Rock's mom. And it was ridiculous. I don't even know why she was there, really and truly, but whatever. Battle Royal was cool. Excuse me. It did what it had to do. It gave a lot of women who weren't going to have individual matches a nice shine.
Yeah, so I definitely enjoyed the Battle Royal. I thought that this Battle Royal was everything that the WrestleMania Battle Royal should have been, with, you know, different stars, you know, from the past and the future and the present. I think this one had a little more. I think he had less of the future parts NXT. But yeah, I thought everyone really got to showcase a little bit of themselves. And I think the biggest moment I thought of the Battle Royal was when Asuka and Ember Moon were there one-on-one. I feel like the crowd went bananas, you know, and chanting NXT. I mean, because that was a great feud, a great battle.
And there's technically still unfinished business between them, you know, like, because Ember Moon never beat Asuka. So there's technically still unfinished business. Ember Moon became champion after Asuka relinquished the belt. So you still have a story there you can always go back to.
Yeah, and that's something that I had mentioned, I think, in the past, is that Ember Moon could have had a much better or bigger reign than she did. But the thing is that she was brought in the middle of Asuka's, you know, 500-plus, you know, title reign, which kind of made it a little bit hard. By the time that Asuka was getting called up, you know, you weren't going to keep Ember on NXT too much longer either. So it's kind of like that played against her. But, man, it was great to see that, and I definitely enjoyed the Battle Royal myself. Yep. Do I wish somebody else had won it? I do. I wish Nia Jax was more of this big, indestructible monster. I forget what the nickname for her is, but it's just like
the irresistible force.
She's not like most girls, though. Yeah, it doesn't, because they want to use her as a body shame and a role model, and to show that women of all shapes and sizes can do great things. And she's Samoan, so they don't want people to boo her too bad. But like, yeah, the division needs her to be this big monster heel. They need her to be a monster destroyer, not a sympathetic babyface, because she's not going to be an underdog, okay? Like, you know, you can only do her being, like, outsmarted or outmaneuvered so many times before you're just like, why isn't she just, like, slamming girls around? Like, why doesn't she just squat, like, sit on people and beat them? You know, like, she was the monster destroyer, and then she got, like, you know, started doing, you know, body strong kind of stuff, you know, online and doing all this and started getting buzzed for that. And they're like, well, we can't, people don't want to boo her now. I think that's the problem. They let that go the wrong direction.
Another reason that Nia Jax won, Nia Jax is part of Total Divas. Partnership with E, you need to keep your stars front and center, i.e. the Bellas, Nia Jax, Paige, Lana, Naomi. You want to keep these girls front and center for those crossover fans, to keep them interested in the product that you're giving as far as wrestling and the entertainment aspect. So Nia Jax is a prominent part of that E series, and this will just be more fodder for those cameras.
All right, well, moving on, we get the finals of the 2018 Mae Young Classic, and in a very wonderful match that I thoroughly enjoyed, Toni Storm defeats Io Shirai to win the tournament.
Become the winner, you know, so we don't have Japanese women winning it 2 years in a row. I mean, I kind of mentioned to you guys, you know, that before, that I felt like there wasn't a whole lot of heat within the Mae Young Classic tournament. And I get it, because it's meant to be a serious tournament, so there's not a lot of defined characters and a lot of storylines. But when it came down to the final four, like, I didn't really feel an emotional attachment to any of the final four that I wanted them to win. Okay. Like, I know people like, you know, people like Io, and she's a really good wrestler, and same with Toni Storm, but like, to me, they don't really bring a whole lot of emotion or personality to the things they do. I just don't, like, other people see it and feel it, but I just don't see it and feel it with them. So this match, although, yeah, they went out there and busted butt and all this, like, it just didn't have me. It didn't really grab me. You know, I guess I don't really dig either of them that well. And yet again, it was It was a match that didn't, there was no animosity. There was no kind of, you know, story reason. It was just supposed to be two good wrestlers. And that works sometimes, but the entire tournament to me was that, apart from like Rhea Ripley kind of being a heel, but she's really green. And so that didn't really work as much for me either, just because I could see like where she was slipping up and that was my distraction. But it was, yeah, it was a good match, but to me, like it just didn't really do much for me. I think I probably got up and made myself something to eat or something during that match.
Wow. I absolutely positively, I've seen Io Shirai before. I'm not like a fan, like, oh my gosh, you know, whatever. And I've seen Toni Storm numerous times. For me, this one was one of the best matches of the night because they were so great. The emotion was, or the story was, you know, I really thought Io was going to win this. Io has been signed longer in the Performance Center. Toni Storm is just, you know, she is a female HBK of the modern era. She has personality, charisma. She's just got this something about her that draws you to her to watch, to see what she's going to do, the way she moves, the way she carries herself. She gets in the ring. She doesn't have to necessarily be overly heelish, but she's just going to just do something that's going to make her stand out and apart for me from just the regular competitors doing the same moves. So just her charisma and the fact that, you know, last year she didn't win, you know, she went home and had to regroup and come back again. This is a world travel young lady, you know, 16 countries before she's 20 years old or whatever they were saying. She's been everywhere. She's wrestled a lot of people. She's kind of been there, done that. And honestly, again, I was not expecting her to win this one. I thought they were going to keep it on EO, and because the UK brand that Toni is signed to, they're good. They're, every lady on there is good, but they're not that crossover appeal, and they're not in that Japanese market, which WWE has started to take over. But Toni Storm pulled this out, and I could have done without the tears at the end, but I get the emotional buildup that they were doing throughout the tournament and the match for her to win this one. But these ladies, yeah, they kicked ass from bell to damn bell. I mean, couple finishers kick out of, back and forth. It was an amazing match. For me, it was the essence of what all of Evolution should be and could have been, for you to have two strong competitors in there wrestling. We want to go away from the divas. We want to go away from the drama. We want to go away from the heavy storyline and go back to the action of wrestling. And that match did that for me.
Yeah, so I definitely think that there's a story with Toni Storm not making it to the finals, you know, last year, and then with Io being this big signing, you know, she's of course, without a question, one of the best women wrestlers in the entire world. So you have that, you have two women who, you know, bring a lot of eyes to the product. The Mae Young Classic is a great way to spotlight these people. And, you know, I thought that it could have gone different ways as far as this. Maybe Tegan Nox would have made it to the finals had it not been for her injury. I'm not sure, you know. There's different options and routes they could have gone. I think that, yeah, this is a really great match to watch, and I enjoyed it. The finals was good. Danny, go back and rewatch it for skipping out on it.
That's what I'm saying. I don't feel a connection to either character.
I know, but maybe you'll actually enjoy the match. You know what I'm saying? And at the end of the day, that may help you a little bit. Maybe something at this match, because it was really good, will make you feel like, okay, well, now I get this character or the other character. Who knows? But anyways, yeah, it was great. Now, you know, really curious to see what's next for Toni Storm. Will she remain part of NXT US, or will she be part of NXT UK full time? Which one will be? I mean, obviously she's overseas, so, but she signed with NXT before, I think, the UK deal, but then again, she may not. I'm not sure. I don't really pay attention to people's contracts, but we shall see. Maybe they'll double dip her like the like British Strong Style and go different routes. All right, so the next match, we get a 6 women tag match. Sasha Banks, Bayley, and Natalya defeating the Riot Squad. I thought this match was pretty good. It's, you know, we just go from one big match and we're heading to another set of big matches. And the middle of the card, you put in some of the crowd favorites in there. Of course, you also get the, you know, the heel team together and have a good old fun 6 women tag. It did its job. It you know, people could enjoy this match and get ready for the next few matches. So I thought it was great placement, great way to go middle of the card and have a fun 6 women tag match.
Yeah, a fun match. Of course, you know, the babyfaces went over. You know, Sasha got to hit her her Eddie Guerrero tribute and kind of, you know, try her best not to cry in the ring. You know, like she is prone to. That's one thing that I like. Was talking with somebody, okay, but you know, at the end of the show, like everybody comes out and every single woman who wrestled on the show and everybody who helped, like, come out and stand on the stage and they're all like, "We did it!" It's like a feel good moment. Like, kayfabe's all broken, nobody cares, and I was like, it seemed corny, it seemed forced. Okay, like I get it. It's emotional. It's pro sports. Like, you put a lot of yourself training and working towards this stuff. But like, do you have to cry in the ring every other match? Like, it's just, it feels.
You boys don't have hormones and estrogen, okay? Girls cry at the dumbest of reasons. The sky is a nice shade of cornfire blue, and we're gonna cry. I mean,
you want to be a tough. You want to be a tough girl and an athlete, and then you cry, and it's weird, okay?
It's
guys
it's,
don't know what to do when women just start crying for no reason, okay? Listen, guys don't know what to do when that happens.
I'm gonna go into the other room now and make a sandwich for myself because I'm
just
hungry.
Just send her a hand of tissue. I am not a proponent of girls crying all the time, but in this instance, in this case, for this night, I get it. I understand. Being a female and being a second-class citizen, not in a country where you should be equal, but in a country where you should be equal, I'm sorry, and to finally kind of be able to stand tall, to shine, to show the world that we women can do this, we can achieve, we are just as good, if not better than the men, to have the full support and attention of a company that traditionally has literally given you 2.3 seconds to run down to the ring because we're going to give everybody a break. The intermission is your match. So all of this culminating for these ladies who've watched this. They may not have personally experienced it, but you had ladies like Mickey, Trish, all the old school ladies there. You know, the veterans, the Hall of Famers, these ladies, the Baileys, the Sashas, who watched wrestling, who didn't have role models that were female. They had male role models because they didn't see the women in these types of matches, these types of situations. It's very overcoming. When you make history and every one of those ladies, no matter what their role, whatever, winners, losers, scramble, Royal Rumble, 6-person tag, whatever, they were historic, that they were on the first pay-per-view. They were able to say that we were on an all-female pay-per-view, that this company finally gave us the ball. When you make history, it is overwhelming. It is to a point where nothing inside you can be contained and your emotions come out. So the fact that they were crying and bawling on a Monday night, I got a problem with it. But for this pay-per-view, it absolutely positively was justified and understandable. I choked up a little bit, and I don't just cry for nothing. I was just like, I was so proud and happy that they finally got the opportunity that the world could see on a grand stage, because we know the WWE is the end-all be-all for some people as far as wrestling is concerned, that women's wrestling is a viable product, and it is something that should be taken notice of and given more opportunities than what they have. So, yes, girl power, and damn sure, yes, the Pacheco girls, y'all did it. I get it.
Okay, so I can understand the individual crying at matches, but that's what I'm saying, like, when everybody got there on the stage together at the end for like the group photo, it felt kind of like the end of Return of the Jedi, where for no reason they all just stand there together and take like a group photo. Like, it seemed corny. Okay, it seemed corny. I understand everything you say, and I understand the reasoning behind it. But you don't, you know, like, to have everybody come out and be like, "We did it," and have the champs like cling titles, like, that seemed corny to me. It seemed hokey.
They did it together. Every one of them did it together. They stood there and they took it in. They were standing in Nassau Coliseum in a historic building.
And at the end of Return of the Jedi, they blew up the Death Star for the second time, and they all stand there and pose together. Okay, like, it seems forced and corny. They don't have to respect each other, because you're technically all in this together. Yes, but it's also a competitive sport. You want to be better than the person next to you. Charlotte and Becky were 12 feet from each other after they just beat the living snot out of each other for half an hour.
Are you sure? Because I thought they separated the babies and the faces, from what I remember.
They were all on the stage together, is what I'm saying. They're 12 feet from each other. If they hate each other, they should be tearing each other apart. They were doing that for weeks, jumping each other backstage, and they just, you know, and she literally powerbombed her through a table off the top, like, they tried to murder each other, but for a few moments, they could decide that it's okay to hold a truce, because together as women, we did it. That's what I'm saying, seemed corny. Okay, if you just had a handful of baby faces out there, that would be okay to me. But you have everybody, the whole roster, like, go get the girl from catering, let her come out too, and, you know, like, all this. Like, it seemed like it was just too much. It just seemed sappy and corny.
Your testosterone is showing.
If all men did it too, I'd be pissed, okay? It's nothing to do with men or women.
But for that instance, it needed to be. They kept as much as possible, because they did separate the babies, and the heels and the baby faces were separated. There was a dividing line by Stephanie. Stephanie was the start of the heels. There was a line there, kind of sort of in the sand, but the fact of the matter is, if you just have the baby faces up there, you don't get to experience this moment that you participated in as a heel.
It's called, like, it's not a play. Not everybody gets to come out and hold hands at the end and take a bow, okay? Like, it's professional. It's meant to be a sport and a professional wrestling where everybody hates each other.
In this first ever of its kind for this company.
The first ever WrestleMania, did Andre, you know, did all the babyface and the heels come out and say, "We did it, we did WrestleMania, congratulations to us."
It was not a big deal at the time. It wasn't a big a deal as this. I mean, millions of people.
This is bigger than WrestleMania, is what you're saying right now.
WrestleMania, I am, because millions upon millions of people did not watch the first WrestleMania. They have cumulatively watched the first WrestleMania, but at the time, in the moment, no. And you have a smarter audience now than you did back then. Yes, again, it's kind of breaking it down for people who don't like understand what's happening or whatever. But again, the experience, the fact of this huge accomplishment, you don't want to take any woman away from this accomplishment because of a storyline. Your athletes, yes, you have to be an athlete in this ring to do what you do, for us to go against each other, to be in the ring. So we should share in this moment for this moment. Again, if they do it again, I don't expect them to all come out and do a curtain call to take a bow like that. That's wrong. But for this particular moment, it was absolutely perfect. It was fine. For me, it was way acceptable.
Well, it was better than them shaking hands and hugging after every match. Which, I mean, I hate that in wrestling shows.
Yeah. They need to not show each other respect for no reason.
Do it in the back, you know, where I can't see you.
Yeah. Don't be marks for yourself and do it in the center of the ring. Yeah.
But yeah, so Okay, I can see both points. Clearly, I'm going to play Switzerland in this scenario.
Uh-oh.
Oh, my God, that's my gimmick. Okay, cool.
Gimmick infringement. I guess you can't play Switzerland on this one because you're a woman. You have to side with the women no matter what because you're contractually obligated by your gender. So,
just like Danny has to go with the gingers.
I have to go with the gingers. You're contractually obligated to say yes. It's the greatest moment in the history of the universe. You know, even better than when you know Mary had Jesus and all this stuff. Like, I get it. Okay.
Oh my God.
So with that, let's move on to the next three matches of the night. First, for the NXT Women's Championship, Shayna Baszler defeats Kairi Sane by technical submission to win back her NXT Women's Championship. Of course, this with shenanigans as the other two Four Horsewomen were there to land the assist. But Shayna Baszler, you know, and her fellow Horse Women, too much for Kairi Sane to overcome. Baszler leaves with the championship. Four fingers up because the Queen of Spades is the new champion, reigning supreme over NXT.
Great match. These two have great chemistry. I love the series between them. You know, realistically, you need to kind of, I think Shayna works better at top of the division, especially now if she's going to be even more heelish because she's not only going to be the bully, but now she's got two other people to watch her back that can help her cheat and interfere in matches. And then she can still be like, oh yeah, no, I totally did it on my own. Like nobody can beat me. Like, well, yeah, you had your friends kicking people in the head and stuff. Like that's why they couldn't beat you. But, I guess I don't think Marina and Jessamyn have really had that many matches. I think they've only had a couple matches at NXT house shows on the loop. So I don't know if they're, you know, the girls weren't on NXT this week. So I don't know if they're going to become like a regular part or they were just there in support and they kind of decided to jump the ring and, you know, nobody really said that much about it. You know, even though there were baby faces also there in that little six pack and Candice LeRae or anything didn't decide to hop and kind of try to help Kairi out. You know, they're just like, yeah, that's Kairi's business. Let her deal with it. You know, but like, it was, yeah, fun match. I think Shane is going to work great again at the top of the division. Kairi is amazing at fighting from underneath. You know, that is some of her best stuff. Is just being the underdog babyface, strong style selling is peak with her. So interested to see where both ladies go now, who lines up as the next challengers for Shayna. You know, do yet again it after every big event on a takeover when or NXT when somebody, the question then goes, well, when are they coming up? I don't know if you need to bring Kairi up right now. I think she's good in NXT, you know, and unless you plan to bring her up and do something with her big right away. But I think she's still got a lot of story that she could do in NXT. So, yeah, this is one of my favorite. Well, we can say second favorite match of the night.
I say they jump the shark and they bring up, the three of the Four Horsewomen and the stable of the two champions, the Raw Women's Champion, the NXT Women's Champion, and their two buddies just run rush off over everybody. They go back and forth and they just beat every girl in their rosters, but, you know.
Well, the problem is they want Ronda to be a babyface, though. That's the issue right now. Like, I guess they could change that, but if you bring up the other three girls with her, you instantly... Ronda isn't the baby face in the scenario. It would be difficult to keep that and create that. You know, I don't know if they do it right away. I think they're kind of planting the seeds for, of course, the speculated, you know, four versus four, possibly now looking to be at WrestleMania.
This is definitely the inception of that. With the other two jumping jumping over, inserting themselves in the match just repeatedly over and over again. The announcers talked about the four horsewomen here, the four horsewomen there. That was the seed planted. The girl, Shayna, is a monster damn heel. She was absolutely killing Kairi Sane. Like Kairi hung in there, but that, I don't know, that choke, the actual guillotine choke, I'm calling it, where she hung her and literally had her dangling. I was just like, you know what? Call it now. This was perfect. It was beautiful. It was violent. It was a great heavy heel match, meaning that that's something to interfere. It made you want to cheer for Kairi so that she could overcome these impossible odds. When reality kicked in and Shayna Baszler got her hand raised because she choked this girl out, that was believable. It was great. I don't know how long it is until you see somebody who can actually step up and take on this physical challenger, this physical challenge of Shayna Baszler with her two compadres, because that'll be a tough fight. To beat Shayna is going to be tough. To beat Shayna with backup, even tougher. And I think that gives the whole women's roster at NXT a goal to try to divide and conquer. So that'll be great to see them as they move forward with that.
Yeah, I definitely enjoyed this match. Probably my match of the night, though it was a close one with the next match we're about to talk about. But Baszler and Sane, they're definitely another level. Baszler continues to get better and better every time I see her. I loved everything about this. And yeah, to Danny's point, Baszler as the champion is going to be great, because now, think about it, she's got a plethora of women, baby faces, that can chase that title. And I think, you know, you had Asuka, but she was a baby face, facing many other baby faces. Now you have a heel in Baszler who can just go through the entire division until she's ready to get called up. So that's going to be really cool to see, really fun, see the type of matches. Now with all these women that are coming out, that got signed, coming also out of the Mayhem Classic, the matchups, I can't wait. Can't wait to see Baszler kick some tail. So your next match, the longest match of the night, the only match to go over 20 minutes, went over 28 minutes. The last women's standing match for the WWE SmackDown Women's Championship. Becky Lynch defeats Charlotte Flair, retains the championship.
She proves that she's the man. I mean, that's the big thing. You had to get fantastic match. Like, I was kind of talking and while watching this as it was kind of getting started, that in the past, sometimes last man standing stipulations sound better on paper than they are in practice, because a lot of them, you get to a point where there's this big lull either towards the end of the match where, like, you hit one big finisher and then they stand and wait and count to 10, and then the guy gets up and then they hit another big finisher and then you stand there and wait to 10, and then they da da da, and then boom, big move, and they stand there and wait and count, and then boom, and it just kind of like becomes tiring and just becomes, and you kind of get lost from the match. But I felt that didn't really happen with this one. There was enough story, enough interesting athleticism, and enough, you know, neither woman are like big, you know, have a bunch of big kill shot type moves that they just kept hitting and hitting and hitting. Things were set up. You know, you got a lot of plunder in this match. The ladder being used, you know, multiple chairs, table, of course, sealing the end, kendo sticks involved. It was, you know, fantastic match. Really, really enjoyed it. You know, even, you know, Charlotte didn't look nearly as bad as she does in some other matches, but, fantastic match. Becky dominates, you know, and wonderful match. I mean, really can't say enough. It felt fun and exciting and different and interesting. You know, because there was just so much going on there, and they played well with the stipulation without just kind of wearing out, like I was saying. Big move, try to count to 10, stand up. Another big move, try to count to 10, stand up. Like, it was fun. It was interesting. And you were really excited. I mean, there were a lot of parts in that match where you didn't know who was going to win. And that's something that, you know, lacks a lot of big storyline matches and stuff. Pretty much you can kind of say, oh, they're going to use this and they're going to do this and this and this and this. So even when you feel that, when the wrestlers are able to get you so involved that you believe near falls and these kind of things, is a wonderful feeling. So I think that both ladies did really well. My match of the night, hands down, I mean, very, very close second with Kyrie and Shayna, but fantastic match. Hopefully they keep these two women apart for a little bit now, because that's the only problem sometimes when you have, you know, WWE likes to keep them coming at each other. So when you have a big match, like they did with Sasha and Charlotte, basically, where they had like a Hell in a Cell, and then 2 weeks later on Raw, they had a Falls Count Anywhere match and stuff, like they just kept it going after stipulation after stipulation after stipulation. So hopefully they keep the two women apart. I guess with Survivor Series, they now have different targets heading in different directions. Becky looking for the champion versus champion match, and Charlotte possibly being on with Team SmackDown. So keep them apart, you know, don't, and let both women just kind of build their stories after this big epic showdown.
I think it looks like they might be leaning that way, with Charlotte kind of second guessing herself and doubting her skills, and Becky just being so confident, be calling herself the man and just verbally or Twitterly attacking everybody who dares to post anything as far as
related or unrelated. She just jumps right on it and is like, I'm the champ, blah blah. They should be talking, you know, I'm so much better.
It is awesome. It is absolutely it is one of the greatest things I've seen, including their match, which I'm going into it, I'm like, okay, Charlotte Becky, yeah, wasn't sold on it, but damn if these girls didn't bring their A++ game and just have me seriously on the edge of my seat. I'm watching and I'm like, I think these girls are gonna kill each other. This is amazing. Charlotte gets so much credit from the WWE and her heritage, her lineage, her this, her that. Becky doesn't need all that, and she showed exactly why she does not. Charlotte was able to keep up. Becky was able to keep her with her. They tore down the house, literally and figuratively, in this match, and it should have been the main event, in my opinion. The flow of the pay-per-view worked for me as far as match placement, but this match should have been the very last match, because there was no following it. I don't care who you are and what you're doing. There was no following these two girls. They brought it that hard. I loved it.
Yeah, one of the things that Becky posted the next day on Twitter, speaking of, she showed like a screen snap that said on Twitter, it says, Ronda Rousey followed you. And so Becky just posted the picture and said she tried, which yet again, Rousey and Nikki tried to follow the best they could. Of course, their match was much more storyline, you know, and yet again, it was about the diva. It was, you know, Ronda putting the nail in the coffin of the divas and now making the women's revolution. That was the whole story with that, basically. And Brie trying not to hurt herself or anybody else. But yeah, I get yet again why the main event was the main event, but this match could have very well ended the show, and everybody would have went home happy still.
Yeah, that match definitely brought it. There's still a few clunky parts for me. Mostly, the credit goes to Charlotte for those. So, I'm not gonna say anything bad about Becky Lynch.
You don't say. The clunky parts were blamed on Charlotte.
Yeah, so Becky, though, fantastic. Again, another great performance. if you're gonna put anybody in the last man woman standing match, it's gonna be Becky Lynch. You know, she's not the last kicker for any reason other than she's like one of the best at it. So she brought it, and you know, Charlotte did hold her own. In the end, though, that was not good enough. Becky Lynch retains. She's the champion. Then we go over to the main event of the evening. Ronda Rousey defeats Nikki Bella to retain the WWE Raw Women's Championship. Of course, the main event, Ronda Rousey, the biggest star you have in WWE right now. I don't think you can question that, really. And she, of course, is going to be the headliner. And you had her there take out not one, but both Bellas. At one point, like when she did her big move, she carried both of them. I mean, just showing, you know, beast mode Ronda right there. But yeah, I really enjoyed this match, especially Ronda's performance. She continues to evolve and she continues to get better. That whole selling, you know, that's the biggest thing to me. It's like, okay, how well can you sell? And I think she did a very good job of that. It just looks natural and looks real. It doesn't look forced, so I enjoy that. But yeah, really fun main event. Ronda wins, keeps the crowd happy, and sends the crowd home happy with the big win at the end, does a lot of high fives on her way out, and of course you have all the women on the ramp, the stage there to take their final bow with both champions next to each other to kind of get things rolling on your next matches you'll have for Survivor Series, champion versus champion, Rousey versus Lynch. Can't wait to see that one. So overall, I'm going to give this an A+. I think that they succeeded in everything that they wanted to do. Showcase the women, make the crowd happy, and put out a lot of great performances. I think in every way this show delivered. So the women evolution gets an A+ from me.
It gets an A++. It would have gotten an extra plus. Just that main event should have been Becky Lynch, Charlotte, last woman standing. But outside of that, that was not even a major hiccup or flaw. They get A++ because, again, it was historic. Everyone did a good job. You could see and feel how big, how important, how this meant everything to every person involved. Every woman literally, truly brought their A-game. Liv Morgan had the freaking match of her career, in my opinion. And it's Liv Morgan. I paid attention to Liv. This is how important, this is how big, this is how much each girl cared. And I just love the A++.
I'll let you have my plus. I believe an A is good and solid. You know, it was fun. It was a good show overall. But what stopped it from getting a plus for me was the curtain call at the end. You don't have to show respect. Everybody knows you did it together. You don't have to come out there and be a mark and wave it out in front of everybody.
All right, so that was WWE's evolution. Now we're going to take a quick peek at WWE's crown jewel happening from the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia.
Well, they haven't really said it's from the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia in a couple weeks, okay? They just keep saying, watch it live on the WWE Network. They have dropped the word Saudi Arabia from anything advertising about that.
But it is in Saudi Arabia. They are there as... This is Thursday our time. I know for a fact that there was a crew already on Tuesday night of WWE production team in Saudi Arabia, and the WWE superstars left from Atlanta to go to Saudi Arabia.
That's why SmackDown didn't have the big stage. They just had the flat entrance. And that was what kind of my guess is. Like they sent the big stuff. It's on the boat already going over to Saudi Arabia. But you know, I mean, you part of equality is remembering everyone. Okay, so we had our women's event. Now it's time for the boys to take center stage, And at the end of the night, they all get to come out together and hold hands and raise arms and be like, we did it. We had an all-men's event, and it was great.
I just hope they don't all get, like, murdered in the embassy. That's all I'm hoping for.
Well, just stay away from that. Yeah. Yeah. Just go to your hotel, go to the venue, go to the airport. Okay, don't hang around and do all things, please.
Right. Now, before we do talk about the actual show and our predictions here, I do want to bring up two changes to the card. Of course, John Cena and Daniel Bryan are not going to be going to the show for their own personal reasons. So they had to be taken out because they were already advertised. So on Monday, we see Bobby Lashley winning his match. So Baron Corbin decides to go ahead and put him on the World Cup tournament and replace John Cena. So that's how you get John Cena out of the show. The heel character of the show decides to just take out John Cena and replace him with Lashley. So that's how you get him out. Then on Tuesday, of course, all three of us were there at the State Farm Arena in Atlanta for SmackDown Live. And I got to see, in my opinion, one of the best. Oh, this might have been actually the best WWE match I have seen live. We had AJ Styles defend his WWE Championship versus Daniel Bryan.
To open the show, no less. That was also a big thing to me. It wasn't like they're like, we're going to do it in the main event of this show. Nope, we're open to the show with it, brother.
It was awesome. It was great. Everything about it. They had plenty of time, which I also was happy about. We get AJ Styles defeating Daniel Bryan clean by submission. So he retains the championship. So I guess they already had their match. Post-match, of course, Samoa Joe comes out, beats up both of them. And later on, the match is made. AJ Styles versus Samoa Joe at Crown Jewel. So that's how you get Daniel Bryan out of Crown Jewel. Now, you take out those two guys, though. You do add one person to the Crown Jewel event. And the only woman to be in this event, as Renee Young will be one of the three commentators at WWE's Crown Jewel.
Well, I'm also really confused by that, too, because now is she going to be off-site, or is she going to be backstage, or is she, you know, somehow, I mean, if she's going to be in front of the crowd, she's going to have to be in full garb. And, I think she was kind of, had spoken before when WWE went there the first time that she understood, but she didn't really feel it was fair, about women not being allowed there. She wasn't really excited about that, but here she is part of it now. So that's where they haven't really explained, you know, like, is the commentary table still going to be there at ringside? Are they going to be on the stage or something? Like, how is it going to be done? Renee, she is part of the team. She was part of the team. She's been calling more and more. They announced her for, she's with part of the Mae Young Classic. They announced her for Raw. She called Evolution as well. She's becoming an integral part of the team. And I'm curious to see how this actually plays out with her calling it live, knowing their restrictions and knowing that the heat that was even brought upon mildly when from Shinsuke Nakamura's entrance video showed 1.4 seconds of a woman's bare arm while she was playing violin. That kind of even drew some heat from the last time they were in Saudi Arabia. So I'm very, very curious to see how this situation is handled. Amongst others, of course, but this being one of them.
Well, the majority of the heat came from the fact that they showed a promo with the wrestlers, I believe it was Sasha and Bayley, in their full gear, which is, of course, not a whole lot of gear to begin with, as a promo for an upcoming pay-per-view was broadcast into the live crowd. the women in Saudi Arabia, they are very, very restricted to what they can do. My belief, and I do not know this for a fact, is that Renee coming, and the reason that she is able to come, Renee is now married. She is a married woman, and of course her husband will be there. I expect that that is going to help the quote-unquote cause, because her husband will be there in Saudi Arabia with her, and that it will not necessarily be a thing where she's going to be unaccompanied wherever she is, that there will be somebody who will have to accompany her back and forth. If not him, then a member of the staff, a male member, of course, of the staff, will have to be around her to keep an eye on her, because in this country, women, you know, can't be left alone. I don't think that she would necessarily have to adhere to the whole headdress and gear, but I believe in order to keep happy, she might do something Americanized to cover a lot of her. I don't know. It's going to be interesting, but I think the fact that she is married is one of the reasons why they're letting her into the country, so to speak, to do this. Women in Saudi Arabia can work. There's just very strict guidelines on where they can be and when they can be unaccompanied. And she will clearly be accompanied by her husband, as well as a multitude of men on staff. Again, historic, and who knows? You know, Renee's Canadian. She might just say, buck the system. And, you know, I doubt if she does anything to jeopardize the WWE relationship in this
whole mess. Canadians aren't really known for bucking the system. Canadians are very, we don't want to make a lot of enemies. We just kind of want to come and be polite. And
yeah, and half of them claim that they're actually American, so.
Yeah.
She claims her Canadian background. She married an American lunatic. She lives in a desert. We don't know exactly where Renee is. She could be a loose cannon waiting to happen.
Please wait. Please keep that cannon in its hiding spot until after you get back from Saudi Arabia. It could be very dangerous if the loose cannon decides to go up there, first of all.
Yeah, true. I think she'll be a good girl as she, you know, is part of the company she's decided to be, and she won't jeopardize, and anything they ask of her, she'll do. And once we see what she has to do or what they do because of her being there, then we'll be able to, you know, talk more freely about the justice or injustice of it all.
Well, speaking of justices and injustices, fighting for the justices of all men, and, well, maybe women. Hulk Hogan will be a WWE Crown Jewel, and he will be the host of the event. Quietly announced by WWE this week, Hulk Hogan is back, brothers.
All right, the live event host, the Hulkster, yet again. There's just another thing that we talked about, similarly to HBK coming out of retirement. You know, the Undertaker seemingly coming out of retirement, Kane kind of coming out of his kind of pseudo retirement. These are things that the Saudi people have not had a chance to see live. They may have been able to watch some of this stuff on TV or on the network, but they have not seen these stars live. And they are paying ridiculous amounts of money to bring WWE there. So WWE is doing everything they can to make their benefactors happy. I guess they want the Hulkster. You pull John Cena, you give him the Hulkster instead.
It's kind of funny that, you know, Hogan's coming and he can't come to America. He's got to go to the most misogynistic country ever to get back on WWE TV. So, you know, it is what it is. Him being a live host or whatever means nothing. We're going to see the leg drop, the big boot. They're going to get their billions of dollars of...
He's not going to do any of those. He's going to be a host. He might... I don't think he's going to get physically involved. The guy's too broken up.
Yeah, about that. Once a wrestler, always a wrestler. If he's walking, he's dropping that leg or something.
He hasn't dropped that leg in 10 years. He didn't drop it in TNA.
Boot, at least. They're getting the big boot. Come on.
They're getting some punches, and he's going to throw some, yeah. We'll see.
It's interesting, and it'll be interesting to see how the rest of the wrestling world reacts to it. Because again, as you said, it was very quietly announced. It wasn't a huge thing, and Hogan's name is tarnished, but he's still such a name value that I'm surprised it did not make a bigger deal than what they have. So we'll see Monday when they recap Crown Jewel, how the crowd and the rest of the wrestling world reacts to.
So with that, it's time to make our predictions here. All right. So first, as far as the World Cup, we're just going to predict who wins the World Cup. Okay. So here's the card. Shinsuke Nakamura defends the U.S. Championship versus Rusev, and I'm going with Nakamura. Brock Lesnar versus Braun Strowman for the vacant WWE Universal Championship. Braun is taking the championship. D-Generation X versus the Brothers of Destruction. This one could go either way, so it's probably D-Generation X just because, Triple H is booking it. The Bar versus The New Day. I believe that The Bar will be retaining the SmackDown Tag Team Championships. Then I have Rey Mysterio as the winner of the World Cup. And AJ Styles will defeat Samoa Joe to retain the WWE Championship.
Well, I think my predictions are going to be pretty close along those lines. I definitely see Shinsuke retaining. I see DX winning the big tag team match. I definitely see The Bar keeping onto the SmackDown tag titles. And I too am taking Rey Mysterio to win the Crown Jewel tournament. Even in his small outing since he's been back, he's looked really solid, including this past week's SmackDown. And I think he's one of the big stars that that they want to see do some big things in the Crown Jewel tournament. And I think he's still more than capable to have several matches in one night and still have them all look really stellar. I think now's the time when Samoa Joe finally defeats AJ Styles, chokes him unconscious, takes that championship. And I think Braun will walk away with the Universal Championship for the vacated title.
All right. Well, I'm going to differ a little bit here, guys. Shinsuke retains definitely over Rusev. Brock Lesnar wins the Universal title. Braun Strowman comes up short because of something. I have no clue what. Perhaps a Ziggler or a McIntyre is in his future, just not the Universal title. DX will win nothing over the Brothers of Destruction. Undertaker does not grab Kane and come back to lose. The Bar retains. There was a Seth and a Bobby Lashley. I don't care about this match. Bobby Lashley wins because Ambrose it will be in attendance because his wife is there and he needs to watch his woman. And that has how that works out. Ziggler and did I go World Cup stuff? I did. My bad. I wasn't looking at the side of it, so. Scratch my Bobby Lashley. Anyway. All right, so from The Bar, New Day. And World Cup winner in total. I think Mr. Orton hears voices and he wins this damn thing. I think Randy is going to have a great match, he's going to have a great tournament and send everybody back to America empty-handed. AJ Styles does not lose his damn title on foreign soil. He keeps it, and Samoa Joe gets a rematch on SmackDown and wins it that night. So,
all right. Well, those are our predictions, and we'll somehow find a way to all be wrong about them because, you know, that's how we roll. You can catch that noon this Friday, WWE Network. Free for new subscribers, $9.99 for everybody else. And lastly, I just want to talk about the kayfabe list that we all know as the PWI 100 now. It used to be 50 for the women, but it's now PWI 100, as they will recognize 100 women. We're not at 500 yet, but we're getting there. And so here are our top 10 women in the PWI 100. And this is for, of course, time between October to September. So from October 2017 to September 2018. That's the period they rated. It's a kayfabe list. So, you know, they go by various things such as prominent matches, also feature spots, wins, losses, championships, that type of thing. So let's make sure we all remember. Let's not get all up in knot if somebody that you may not think deserves to be there is not there. All right, so here's your top 10. Ronda Rousey at number 1. Number 2, Alexa Bliss. Number 3, Charlotte Flair. Number 4, Io Shirai. Number 5, Asuka. Number 6, Shayna Baszler. Number 7, Carmella. Number 8, Nia Jax. Number 9, Mayu Iwatani. And number 10, Kairi Sane. Your thoughts on the PWI 100's top 10?
Yeah, it used to be, you know, up until 2008, or since 2008, it's been the female 50. But I guess this shows that there are more and more women of higher caliber out there now, especially you look into WWE with their multiple brands. They have a much wider depth of a roster. You know, you have other women's promotions and especially independents, and you have Japanese promotions now getting a little bit more press stateside. So it makes sense to expand it out to 100. Top 10, like you said, it's all done through kayfabe. So wins and losses, you know, who works for bigger companies, who held titles, who they defended those titles against, how big the shows were. You know, so that makes Ronda Rousey absolutely number one. She's undefeated in singles competition. She was the champion. You know, her only matches have come at big shows. So same reason that Brock Lesnar was number one on the PWI 500 this year. You know, he only wrestled, you know, like a combined total of 94 minutes or something in the entirety of the 12 month judging area, but he won, like, you know, he won these matches and he held the championship for a long period of time. He defeated the biggest stars at the biggest shows. You know, I'm always kind of interested to see also what they list as accomplishments, you know, once the full article comes out, not just the list. But that's also why you have people that, you know, a lot of people would say, oh, they're not really a good wrestler, etc. Like Carmella. Most people wouldn't say Carmella should be considered one of the top 10 best women's wrestlers in the world. But we're looking at this from a story standpoint. She was a champion. She won the championship. She defended it. She held on to it. She did all these things and did a bunch of things to keep herself forefront of the division on SmackDown. You know, the winner of the women's Money in the Bank. So that absolutely puts her as a deserving spot in the top 10, despite the fact that, you know, she absolutely is, you know, probably self-admittedly, she knows that she's not one of the 10 best women's wrestlers in the world, but it's about entertaining. And she definitely does that, when she's needed to. It's just an interesting list, you know, but you also have the big stardom three of Iyu, Mayu, and Kairi all in top 10, which is also really saying something, that how big of a place stardom has in the world of women's wrestling, how the kind of prestige that they carry. I mean, Io at one time held pretty much every single, you know, has held every single championship that Stardom has to offer. Once Io and Kairi left for WWE, Mayu Iwatani pretty much took over the top spot as of the ace of the company.
Yeah, she had a fantastic year after she came back from her injury last year.
Yeah, and you look at the expanded list because that probably wouldn't be included. I was thinking that Stardom just had their Grand Prix, and I don't think that the Stardom Grand Prix would have fallen within the.
Yeah, it would have, because I think that the finals were in late September, so it would have, because October to September.
Okay, so that's also why some of the other women are ranked so highly, because I've looked at the full list. But yet again, it's just fantastic to see. But then you start looking and seeing where some people are and where omissions are, and it starts looking like the PWI 500. And you go, well, I thought this person was doing really good things in the indie scene, like, and they're not even listed, you know, or they're listed way down here. So you start getting into kind of, yet again, the biggest the big companies, WWE, DNA. You know, then you start going to Shimmer and Shine and, Queens of Combat in there, and you start going to Stardom, and you start looking at some of the luchadoras in Mexico and who's doing what in the UK. Like, you start factoring all those in. But, I mean, it's WWE has the biggest platform, the most exposure. So holding their championships, in theory, mean the most. But it's an interesting list. It's interesting to see. Side note, the only two women who have been on every single PWI Female 500 since 2008 are Natalya and Lufisto. And Lufisto came, I think Natalya was number 20 and Lufisto was number 23. But they're the only two women who have been in every single female version of the PWI 500 since inception in 2008.
Well, it's an interesting list, of course. As you've already touched base on, it's going to be a WWE heavy list, and the fact that their women are more widely seen throughout the world. But there are several notable indie names on the list. The top 10, 9 out of the top 10 are all WWE. So you really have to go through the list and look to see women who are not necessarily WWE products, who may have passed through there or what have you, but are not currently products on television or within television to see a lot of great, great names. Kiera Hogan is on the list, which I'm just like thrilled to bits and pieces
about. Sue Young at number 13. Coincidence? I think not. Okay. Unlucky 13 for our undead bride.
There you go. We got Shotzi Blackheart on the list, another young lady we've seen a lot of. So I love the fact that it is heavy also in a lot of Japanese wrestlers. As you said, you know, Stardom, and they're getting a whole lot of attention because of the big three there who have been deemed, you know, three of the best women's wrestlers in the world. Outside of this list is, I don't want to call it a vanity list for the WWE, but it basically just lists people that you may be familiar with as far as WWE products go, and mixes in a great mix of female talent. There are hundreds of women or a bunch of other women who have not made this list. Taya Valkyrie, who is a great wrestler, competitor, who's been Lucha Underground, ROH, Impact. I mean, she's been everywhere and faced males and females. Is not on his list. There's just, you know, some omissions, but for the most part, this is just an interesting homage to those women and a talking point, I think, for wrestling and women's wrestling in general. With them expanding the list to have it at 100, that includes a bunch of people who may not necessarily have made a top 50 list. So more push towards women's wrestling, and maybe there'll be a 500 one day, you know?
Absolutely. A lot of great names, and just you know, 50 was not going to give it justice. The talent is tremendous. And kudos to PWI for extending it now, making it a PWI 100. So, yeah, were you guys happy with the list? Let us know. We're on the Twitter machine at FOW Radio. Send us a tweet. Let us know what you thought about the PWI 100. But that is it for the show. So be sure to subscribe to the Fans of Wrestling show on the FOW Radio Network if you enjoyed this and much more about us talking about pro wrestling. We are on iTunes, Stitcher, TuneIn, Podbean, Google Play. Also follow us on the Twitter. Danny's on Twitter at Danny F in Danger. Mika's on Twitter at Mika Villas. I'm on Twitter at YellowmanPA. And until next time, keep watching wrestling.